That tree is a lonely bur oak standing in the middle of a cornfield in southwest Wisconsin. That tree is a tree that sparked the imagination of photographer Mark Hirsch. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Mark Hirsch spent an entire year taking daily pictures of that tree. Strangely, he took all of those pictures with his iPhone, and the results are surprising and stunning. I'll talk with him. And it's also our fall membership drive. Take a moment right now to think about how much you enjoy and rely on Iowa Public Radio. Then make your investment at iowapublicradio.org. Thank you. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It was a challenge from a friend that set photographer Mark Hirsch off on a remarkable journey. Mark spent an entire year taking daily pictures of a tree with his iPhone, and the results are truly remarkable. This started out as a blog, but his photographs have now been published in a beautiful book called That Tree, an iPhone photo journal documenting a year in the life of a lonely bur oak. And Mark is here with me today. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Charity. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And take us back to the beginning of this journey. How did this start?
Well, ironically, it started because I made a post on my Facebook page that I'd gotten an iPhone. And a photographer and mountain biking friend saw my note, and she sent me a text, said, "Isn't the camera great?" And my response was, "I didn't buy a camera, I bought a phone." And she said, "No, seriously, treat it like a camera." And so I did. It was January 20th, 2012, a snowstorm. I'm driving home to my rural property in Platteville, and I'd driven by this oak tree for 19 years. And I looked down, and I thought, well, that's a nice subject matter. I ran down, made a picture. Drove home. I didn't even know how to get the pictures off my phone at that point. So I emailed it to myself, and the first picture came up on my desktop, and I just started laughing because it was astonishingly beautiful, and it was shot with an iPhone.
What did that first picture look like?
It was a lovely scene. The tree, its skeletal form silhouetted against that incredible snowstorm. Just a nice, quiet, solitary scene. That, you know, even with a high-end SLR, it would have been a little bit difficult because of the extreme contrast range. And the quality was absolutely astonishing. And that one experience inspired me to start making a picture a day of whatever inspired me. You know, as a commercial photographer, I'd stop making pictures for myself. But that one photo somehow re-inspired my interest and curiosity, and I started shooting pictures, you know, for myself, much like I had when I was in college. And I'd stopped doing that a long time ago.
So what was it about the tree that brought you back? I mean, it's one thing to say, I'm going to shoot a picture a day. A lot of people have been signing up with a website to do just that, to share their one picture a day that really inspires them. What brought you back to this bur oak?
Well, and actually, for the first several months, I was not shooting the tree. I shot the tree as my first picture, and then I continued to make a picture a day of, much like everyone else, whatever inspired me. It was easy, whatever I happened to see that day. And it's March 13th. Lovely sunset. I'm driving home that same path and looking for something to place between me and that sunset. And I turned on my township road and I looked down. I'm like, huh, that tree's in the perfect spot. So I parked my truck, ran down and made another picture of the tree. That was March 13th. And I posted it on my personal Facebook page. And I just went on the next day making other pictures. And on March 23rd, one of my old mountain biking friends, he sends me a note on Facebook. He'd finally seen this photo. And he says, "Dude, what's with you and that tree? You should do a photo a day with it." The next day, on March 24th, I officially started the project.
And you made a promise to yourself that not only would you take a picture of this tree every day, but you would take every single one of those pictures with your iPhone.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I have to say that had I shot it with any other camera, I don't think I would have remained as inspired because it would not have been the same level of challenge. Honestly, it harkened back to when I got my first SLR when I was in college before I even knew I wanted to be a photographer. It was kind of an adventure. It was a learning experience. It was extremely challenging. And then add the component of dealing with Midwest weather every day for a year. I'll tell you what, it was kind of crazy because the iPhone doesn't like the cold weather, and we had a brutal winter.
So let's talk a little bit more about this tree. I mentioned it's in the middle of a field in southwest Wisconsin. It's about a mile away from your home. Describe the surroundings for us.
It's nestled right on the fringe of a cornfield, literally within 10 feet of the tillable ground where the farmer last year planted corn. This year he planted soybeans. It's at the crest of a waterway that flows between the two fields. The grasses that are in the waterway are not even native grasses. They're bromes and European grasses. So the native habitat is pretty much gone. Yet this sentinel of the prairie still lingers and stands there so proudly. It's a beautiful valley. I wish it had prairie grasses in it, but it's just ironic because this tree exists in the midst of a monoculture, and without it, there are so many things that wouldn't exist. You know, the occasional deer, the turkey, whatever it may be. I mean,
all of the birds that perch on the tree.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, there's actually a couple bird photos in the book, a bird's nest with eggs in it. Yeah, you know, these little simple things, the little simple elements of habitat that absolutely would not exist were it not for that lone bur oak.
The tree, you did have some research done on it. How old is it?
Yes, I have a geologist friend from the University of Wisconsin-Platteville that came out and did a core sample. And his field of expertise is oak trees specifically. And he did a core sample and unfortunately discovered that the tree is hollow. And my immediate reaction was, oh, no. And he's like, no, really, that's not that big of a deal. Not unusual for those old oaks to be hollow. He said, based on the core sample and his extrapolation of the depth for the additional age, he figures around 165 years old.
All right. And on this program, we've talked a number of times about the really environmental disaster around the turn of the 20th century, where basically every tree in Wisconsin was cut down.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, for fields,
yep.
Farmers cleared so
yes.
many trees. Why do you think this oak tree stands?
That's a great question. And it's really, I've got a good story that goes with that. And, so the property was owned by a family with the last name of Vine from 1869 till 1989. So in 1989, the property was sold to a farmer in Platteville, and he broke soil for the first time. The sod had never been broken. It turns out that property was in pasture all that time. Therefore,
wow.
That's why the tree was still there. But so this farmer then turned the sod for the first time in 1989, planted a crop of corn, and I went and interviewed him and said, hey, you know, why didn't you take the tree? And he said, well, there were not that many trees. And he said, and I just kind of liked that tree, and I thought that was a nice reflection. It fit the title of the book. And so then a friend of mine who owns the property now, I thought he was leasing it from Mr. Digman, and it turned out he owns it. But I was at a gathering in April of 2012, and I had a conversation with Tim, and I was saying, you know, it amazes me. With commodity prices the way they are, farmers are taking out their waterways, or they're reducing their waterways. They're taking out fence lines because there are fewer and fewer livestock farmers, mostly grain farmers. And Tim says, well, he says, here's the reality. In the spring of the same year, he had a bulldozer operator out there taking out his fence rows and managing his waterway. And he went on a Saturday to inspect the work. And the bulldozer operator says to Tim, while I'm at it, you want me to push that tree over too? And Tim's comment was, that tree's been there for over 200 years. I'm not the guy that's going to knock it over.
Wow.
Just gave me goosebumps.
Yeah. So you decide to take a picture of this tree every day. And the first few pictures are beautiful. But how long did it take you to think, wow, this is going to be really challenging to come up with a different photograph every day?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it didn't take long. Within 2 weeks, all the obvious compositions had been capitalized on. And, you know, I started going, what have I got myself into? But then, you know, I thought, okay, I don't have an editor dictating how I have to tell this story. It's purely, at that time, a self-serving goal and a self-serving challenge. So I just started venturing out further and further. And I think the first day that I really ventured out beyond the tree looking for a composition, I went way down the valley. And I'm literally flipping through my book to see what the date was. And it was April 14th. And I walked way down the valley south of the tree, and I found an old cow skull that was hanging on a fence line. And I'm probably, with this picture, I bet I'm 300 yards away from the tree. And I've got this wonderfully weathered cow skull in the foreground, and the tree is a single tiny solitary element in the background. But I started to realize, you know, the sky's the limit, you know. And I went beyond that. I started shooting things as simple as details, be it the bark, be it the leaves. I expanded my storytelling potential, and it kind of freed me up a little bit so I didn't have to stress about literally an image of the tree every day.
How long did you spend at that tree every day?
It kind of depended. There might be days I would go down there and the light wasn't right. I wouldn't find a picture that inspired me, or I might make some pictures, but I didn't feel that I was happy enough with them to publish them. So I would wait, and I might come back at sunset. And there were days when I didn't have that much liberty. I had a commercial job that would restrict it, and I had to settle for what I had. But it ran the gamut. There was one morning I got up early, looked out. It was gloomy and overcast. I'm like, I guess I'll shoot later on in the day. And I'm in the kitchen brewing up my coffee, and my wife is on the second floor of our house, and she hollers down, "Mark, did you see that sunrise?" And I look, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. And the sun had just peaked, just a little sliver of opening in the clouds on the horizon. So I jumped in my truck, drove the mile and a half down the road to the tree, ran down there in the field, and pulled out my iPhone. Literally, I shot a single frame, and the sun winked out, and it was hidden behind the clouds. And that was the picture of the day. That's the only time that happened.
So what did your wife think when you said, what I'm going to do for a year? Because this really tied you to your home. You couldn't travel.
Early on, she literally didn't have any idea what I was doing. You know, I was getting up before sunrise. I mean, way before sunrise, because it's one of the most beautiful times of the day. And I'd be out there, you know, all alone in the valley waiting for the sun. And, about 2 or 3 weeks into the project, she goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm making a picture a day of a tree." And her next question was why. And, of course, I did not have an explanation.
Now, you had been driving past this tree, and I assume your wife had been, for almost 20 years.
Yes.
Had you guys ever talked about that tree before?
No, absolutely not. But, I mean, I'd admired it. I mean, it's a really prominent fixture. It's a lovely old bur oak, gnarled, and it's just got a really nice form to it. I'd admired it. I had never, ever considered making a picture of it until that crazy coincidence with my iPhone on the 20th of January.
Crazy. So what kinds of things did you have to give up to be able to take a picture of the tree every single day?
Yeah, well, my daughter graduated from high school in June of 2012. And so the objective and the goal for the family was the last big family vacation. And unfortunately, Dad had a commitment that he wasn't going to back out of. So the entire family had to sacrifice our traditional vacation that year.
What did they say about that?
You know, they weren't too happy about it at the time, but my daughter Cassandra has become one of my strongest supporters. You know, she's expanded the young demographic of followers on my project because she's so great about sharing with people. And then her young friends see it and go, "Wow, that's really interesting."
Any other things that you had to miss out on?
Oh, yeah, my spring ski trip with my biking and skiing buddies. And 2 weeks out, my friend says, "You mean to tell me you can't come up with 6 or 7 photos to post while you're on vacation and on the ski trip?" And I was like, you know, I just can't do that. I just couldn't have lived with myself. I was that close to achieving an incredible goal.
What made this an incredible goal? Because it didn't start that way.
No. And it didn't start with any objective of going the distance, you know. Initially initiated by a friend's challenge about my iPhone, then another friend's challenge about doing a photo a day with it, which I did not intend to carry out for a year. Then my friend and publisher, who's my photo representative out of Chicago, he sent me a note one day. "Hey, Hirsch," he says, "I'm kind of digging those tree photos. I think if you went a year, we'd be able to publish a book." Well, later on, I discovered he wasn't serious.
He wasn't serious.
But is he thankful that I went the distance? Because he's actually my publisher, so he stands to gain.
was he just yanking your chain?
He was. He never imagined that anybody would embrace that idea. So apparently I was the guy.
Oh, wow. So we're going to have to take a break here in just a minute, and we'll talk more about the personal journey that this turned into and a lot of the people that you connected with through your website as well. But I want to ask you, because you talked about sunrises and you took a lot of pictures of sunrises, but I remember that summer. It was our drought summer. There were a lot of blazing sunsets that year too. Why was it sunrise that attracted you so
much? Well, actually, I shot both. I mean, there's some lovely sunsets in there as well. But
And the cover of the book is a gorgeous sunset.
Yes, it is. But, you know, there's something about being up and starting your day, hanging out in the valley like that. It was so relaxing, pleasant escape. I don't know. That's probably as much as I can say.
It just was the thing you wanted to do.
Yep.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with photographer Mark Hirsch, who spent an entire year taking daily pictures of a lonely burr oak that's in the middle of a field in southwest Wisconsin. He took all of those pictures with his iPhone. And you can see a picture of Mark and his book on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. You can also see a lot of the pictures from the book at the website thattree.net. And these pictures are well worth looking at. As I mentioned before, we will go on to talk about the personal journey this turned into for Mark. And you're welcome to join our conversation as well with your questions, your experiences. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My guest is photographer Mark Hirsch. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and this hour I'm talking with Mark Hirsch. He's a photographer who worked for many years for the newspaper in Dubuque and then went freelance in 2006. He lives in Platteville, Wisconsin, and his imagination was captured by a burr oak tree in the middle of a field about a mile away from his house in southwest Wisconsin. He spent a year taking pictures of that tree with an iPhone, publishing those pictures online, and now he has published a book called That Tree, an iPhone photo journal documenting a year in the life of a lonely burr oak. And Mark, I mentioned that you went through a big career change in 2006. That was not a career change of your choosing. Many people in the newspaper business have been through similar changes over the past few years.
Yep, definitely.
How did that change your idea of who you were and what you did when you had to leave the newspaper?
Well, you know, and when I left the newspaper, I was an editor, so I really was no longer making pictures. And, you know, it's a limited job market for newspaper opportunities. And my family had no desire to move. We own a 200-acre farmstead in rural Wisconsin. And so I had to make some career decisions and decided at that time I'm going to try and make a go of it as an independent photographer. And fortunately for me, the Iowa caucuses were really getting into their heavy throes. I have a photography representative who hired me regularly. I spent that first year doing nothing but crisscrossing the state of Iowa, photographing the candidates. And so I was able to build a pretty decent freelance career, and I was back behind the camera, probably the greatest reward from the whole experience. And it was an unexpected bonus of the career change.
And a lot of people in businesses like newspapers and radio, we work our way up to management. A lot of people who work their way up to management find that they don't like what they're doing so much anymore because they don't get to get their hands dirty. What attracted them into the business in the first place, now they no longer get to do. Did you go through a transition like that in your own life?
Oh, I did, absolutely. And I mean, I thought the world of my career at the Telegraph Herald. It's a phenomenal newspaper, a really well-run product. And but I'd gotten to a point in my career where I guess I was comfortably miserable. That's kind of how I describe it. And losing my job was a blessing in disguise. It got me back behind the camera. I was back doing what was my passionate desire, why I got in the industry in the first place. And, it was a fun challenge managing a team of really talented photographers. But I have to say it's much more rewarding being behind the camera making pictures again myself.
You also went through another frightening, difficult experience just shortly before you started taking these pictures in a car accident.
Yeah, in October of 2011, I was on a commercial photo shoot in South Dakota, and I wrapped up 3 days of photography, photographing regional brands of seed corn companies, and I was two blocks from my hotel, and I was in a really bad accident, a concrete truck. Had its concrete chutes out behind the truck driving down the shoulder of the state highway. And I have no memory of the accident. The last thing I remember, I was making a lane change. I was behind a van or a truck, and I can remember a funny thing I remember. I remember the song Victim of Love by the Eagles was on the radio. Strange thing to remember. Next thing I remember, and I was making a lane change, next thing I hear is a woman's voice in my head saying, "Sir, sir, are you okay?" And they said it again, "Sir, sir, are you okay?" And I remember I opened my eyes, and the roof of my truck was on my head. There was something against my shoulder, and I had no idea at the time, but it was the concrete chutes, and they had gone through my windshield and hit me in the head and knocked me unconscious, and I drove, you know, 150 yards down the road, you know, unconscious, yeah. And what a crazy experience. And so, you know, for the next 3 months, my doctor had me laying low. I mean, I had a severe concussion. They didn't want me doing my commercial photography, and so, you know, I mean— a lot of time just spent there pondering your circumstance, you know, probably borderline PTSD. I was not in a good way. And then I got the iPhone, and my friend inspired me to make a picture, and it turned out to be an incredibly transformative process. It gave me focus. It gave me something to be motivated and inspired and driven to do. And truly, you know, at the time, I didn't realize it, but now I can reflect on it and see that it was an incredibly healing situation and circumstance, a wonderful coincidence.
When did you start to share these pictures more widely? You talked about posting them on your Facebook page. Where else were you posting them that people started to see them?
Yeah, mostly literally on my personal Facebook page. And then in June of 2012, the local newspaper in Platteville, Wisconsin, contacted me and wanted to do a story on me. And I have an identical twin brother, so I called John. I said, "John, geez, I don't want to have to friend everybody that wants to see my pictures," because I expected there'd be broader interest after a story was featured. And so he said, "Well, we should create a business page for your project." So we created a That Tree Facebook page. And so the Platteville Journal ran the article, and within, you know, a week of running the article, there were 400 followers on the Facebook page. And so it was really kind of neat. So, you know, that was a decent following. And continuing my daily posts and my daily photography up at sunrise, enjoying that wonderful light. And then in September, I got a phone call from Jim Saeta with NBC News. And I thought he was calling me, like everybody else during the caucus year, to take pictures of candidates. And he said, "No, actually, Mark," he said, "I sit two desks away from Meredith Burkett." I recognized her name right away. She's another photo producer at NBC, and she followed me on Instagram. And he says, "Yeah, Meredith finally refers to you as the tree stalker." And, and turned out they were calling me. They wanted to interview me and possibly feature my project on the NBC photo blog. So they conducted an interview and featured me on the NBC photo blog, and then things just went kind of crazy. My That Tree Facebook page jumped from 400 followers to about 2,400 followers.
Wow.
Social media, it works.
Right? And then you started finding that people didn't just like looking at your pictures, but that these pictures really meant something to them. What were some of the things that you started hearing from people?
Oh, it's amazing. You know, I mean, this project, I found a way to inspire myself. I mean, how often does one inspire themselves? You know, probably not very often. I certainly have never inspired myself like I did with this project. But people would reach out to me saying how they wait for my daily posts, that it was almost therapeutic for them, that I was inspiring them, that they were so pleased to see somebody find a constructive use for Facebook. I got one this morning, a message from a woman who had recently received a copy of my book as a gift, and she had recently undergone surgery for breast cancer, and she was reflecting on the value that those images offered to her, the soothing value as she's recovering from her surgery. And I get messages like that every day, and it just astonishes me that my project has reached and touched so many people in such a personal way.
And now you have over 32,000 followers on your Facebook page.
It's amazing.
And that's not counting Instagram and wherever
else,
right?
I know. It's astonishing. And international followers, you know? I mean, an incredible number of international followers. Le Monde in France did a story on me. The Guardian in Great Britain. The Daily Mail in Great Britain. I mean, it's amazing. You know, social media works. The world has gotten very small.
Well, what do you think it is about these pictures that touches people so much?
Well, you know, it's simple. It's wholesome. I've taken the time to do what most people are not willing to do or aren't capable of doing because of the demands and the drive of daily life. I've slowed down. I walk to the Valley of that tree every day. I go down there. I spend my personal contemplative time looking for pictures or just listening, savoring the moment, enjoying the opportunities. And I think that for others that don't have that, it's a wonderful vicarious escape for them.
You can join our conversation. I'm talking with photographer Mark Hirsch. He has just published all of these photos that we're talking about in the new book, That Tree, an iPhone photo journal documenting a year in the life of a lonely bur oak. And if you have questions for Mark, or maybe you've been following along on this journey and you'd like to talk with him, give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Mark, I want to talk about some of these individual pictures. There's so many beautiful, beautiful shots. And we talked about how you worked really hard to find different perspectives of the tree. Some of your most amazing shots, though, one of them that I just love was taken from your truck. And it's a photo with water droplets on the windshield, and the tree is reflected in every single one of those water droplets. It's just stunning. And you took it without even getting out of the cab.
Yeah, that was ironic. So it was election day of November 6th of 2012. And I was contracted by one of the national picture agencies to cover elections in Wisconsin and Iowa. So I was up before sunrise. I cased off the little town hall I was going to make my news picture at, shot pictures. People started coming in the polls around 7. I shot till about 8:15. And then I realized, oh, gosh, I'm going to be in northeast Iowa. I'm not going to get back in time to take my picture. I have to shoot it now. I walked out of the town hall, and it was one of the first snowfalls of November, and it's just the big gobby snowflakes. They're hitting my truck window and melting. So I drove to the tree, parked my truck, and I thought about getting out. And I'm like, wow, look at those snowflakes melting with those big drops of water on my window. So I use an application called Camera Plus, and I thought I had locked my focus on the tree. I wanted the water droplets out of focus and the tree in focus. Well, I held the phone up to make my picture, and I hadn't locked the focus, and the iPhone back focused on the raindrops, the melting snowflakes. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I was shooting the wrong picture, and I ended up making that photo, and it's absolutely amazing. I mean, it was physics at work. The tree's upside down in every one of those raindrops.
Wow. What kinds of different apps and different tools did you use with your iPhone, and did you have rules about what you could use?
Well, my goal with this project, and it still is my rule, is that I treat the iPhone like a camera. I'm not using the Instagram filters. I'm not using Hipstamatic filters. My images are all in the vernacular called the no-filter approach to iPhone photography. The applications that I use that allow me to make the phone perform more like a traditional camera are Camera Plus and Pro Camera. And the reason I like those two applications is because they both allow me to control the place that's in focus, and they allow me with the most potential, although there's not a lot of potential with the iPhone, but they allow me to control the exposure. Then for post-production, the only tool that I use for the most part is an application called Snapseed. So all of the photos are shot, cropped, and uploaded directly from my iPhone.
And a lot of iPhone photos have the distinctive shape of an iPhone. Most of your photos look to me like they're square. Was
yes.
that a goal as well?
Yeah, well, when my friend Corey Pepelinjack inspired me to treat my iPhone like a camera, one of the things she said is, oh, and you have to have an Instagram account. I'm like, well, what's an Instagram account? And she says, oh, it's a photo sharing social media. So I opened up my Instagram account, and Instagram is a square format, and my former editor, Brian Cooper, one day he met with me because he's published books, and I had consulted him for my book project, and he kind of chuckled because I was always a terrible purist. Don't you dare crop the photographs by any of the staff photographers, and don't you dare crop one of my pictures, and here I am cropping every single one of my photos into a square. But, you know, it offered another layer of challenge to the project because I never saw the world in a square format. I saw the world in a traditional panoramic or a vertical format. So it just added to the personal challenge.
Marilyn is on the line at 866-780-9100. Hello, Marilyn. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, Charity. Oh, you know, you are delightful. Every week you come up with something different that I've never thought of, you know, but delightful program. Thank you so much.
What would you like to talk to Mark about?
Well, I just wanted to share with Mark my love of trees, and he's really touched, you know, a chord with me because I have loved trees since I've been a little girl. I used to climb trees, sit in trees to think, you know, and play in trees. So, you know, I need a tree. You know, I'm one of those people that need a tree in my viewpoint so I can look outside, and where I'm standing now, there are trees all around me. But I want to share with him a line from a book I read when I was probably 35 years old. It was the most beautiful book and freeing book because chapter 6, line 1 of this book by Thomas Merton, New Seeds of Contemplation is the name of the book. Line 1 was, a tree gives glory to God by being a tree.
That's lovely.
It is lovely. And his whole chapter talks about things in nature and how all of them know their place and, you know, their mission in life because God put it within them. And I, you know, that was a very freeing chapter to me. So I just want you to know that I will be online looking at your pictures. I did not know about them till now.
Well, wonderful.
I think it's a, you know, a wonderful thing that you spent the time with the tree and time for contemplation.
Well, and I'm so glad Iowa Public Radio was the source that turned you onto my book.
Well, Marilyn, thank you so much for your call today. And as this year went on, every day with the tree, you must have started thinking about the end.
Oh, I did. When, I did. Yeah.
When did that first hit you that I need to do something big at the end?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I was probably 3 months out from the finish when a lot of my professional photographer friends started asking me questions. Oh, what are you going to shoot for the last day? You know, and I'm like, I didn't know what I was shooting tomorrow, let alone what I was going to shoot for the last day. And, you know, I pondered it and, you know, really, I was kind of dreading the end of it. At some point, at the halfway point, I thought, how am I going to do this? How am I going to make it to the end? But then as I'm 3 months out, I'm realizing, wow, this has been a really transformative process. I was amazing myself every day with some of the images I would come up with. And I had no idea what the final picture would be. And my daughter then, probably a month out, my daughter, she starts asking me, what are you going to do for the last day, Dad? And, she said to me, you ought to have a party. You ought to have a big gathering. I'm like, really? And she's like, oh, yeah, wouldn't that be cool? And I'm like, huh, yeah, that would be kind of neat. And I still didn't know what the final picture was going to be. So on her inspiration, I created a Facebook page inviting people to participate in the final photo as a group photo. I knew it wouldn't be my most creative photo, but given the large number of followers, the large number of people in the Midwest – I thought it would really be kind of a participatory opportunity for these people that feel so much a part of the project. And it was astonishing, an absolutely astonishing event. I know you've seen the photo, but it's like 300 people and a dozen dogs showed up on a blustery March day, wading through the mud, the muck, and the fresh snow to pose in a photograph of a beautiful old Baroque tree. It's just magical.
Wow. Before we run out of time, I want to get back to the phones. Rex is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Rex.
Hi there.
Hi. And you're trying to take a photo a day as well?
Well, I'm not trying to take a photo a day as well, but I mean, I think that what he's doing is something that in some level I've been kind of doing, and that is, for lack of a better word, living locally. And I just think that all too often people, me included, maybe it's my age, are thinking about going far away as opposed to the backyard. And I think that by me focusing just on what's here and around me, I've been far more effective in so many ways in my life. And frankly, I mean, I think that the closer you look at one or two things or a few spaces, the more awe you actually find in the world. Rather than going to Yosemite, rather than going to the, you know, the ocean, I think that this, that, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think there's a, There's always too much attention paid to someplace else as opposed to here.
Oh, you're so right. And, you know, that's one of the reflections in my book that I describe is that, you know, people don't recognize the hidden beauty in their own backyards. You know, you don't need to travel the world over to see wonderful things. And for a year, I've been looking at that tree, and every day is a new adventure. Every day is a new discovery. Great observation, Rex.
Rex, thank you so much for your call. And back to that final shot. So you had 300 people come to you in the middle of nowhere.
Yep. Yep.
But also so many people who couldn't come wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah. So a friend of mine, Louise, came. She's an artist at Clark University in Dubuque. She sent me a note when I posted the event on Facebook and said, oh, geez, I'm going to be out of town that weekend. I'm going to miss it. She asked me, could I send you an ornament or something representing me for the final photo? And I was like, Eureka, what a great idea. So then I posted her idea on Facebook, and 24 different people responded to the invite and sent ornaments or pictures or items that reflected them to hang on the tree for that final photo shoot. And one of them, probably the coolest, was from a woman named Geraldine Gahan from Ireland. She sent a handmade card, which included oak leaves from a 200-year-old oak tree in her property. Just amazing.
Wow. Yeah, some of the ornaments are really incredibly ornate and beautiful. Some of them are very simple and beautiful as well.
Yeah, it ran the gamut.
How did you feel that so many people wanted to be a part of this?
Oh, it was amazing. Every day, you know, something new would come in the mail. I mean, literally right up to the final day. And one of them that I got, so I got a note from a friend of mine. His name is Ryan Wetley. He's an Iraq war veteran. And he sent me a note saying, hey, Mark, I'm sending you something that's very near and dear to me. And he told me that he sent it to 1276 Airport Road, which was not my address. I'm like, oh, no, and I'm freaking out. It's really crucial to this friend of mine. What is it? Well, luckily, it's a small town where I live. My mailman knows where I live. So he delivered it, and it arrived, and I opened up the box, and it was his Boston Red Sox hat.
Oh, wow.
And he had worn it when he was in service, and so extremely meaningful. And just an example of how much this project meant to people that he sent something so personal. Yeah, it was pretty overwhelming.
What was that day like?
Oh, geez. So my publisher, Warren Winter, and I were down there early. We were hanging all of the ornaments so we could shoot individual photos and include them in the book. And I was focused on the task at hand. And we got done, and the photo shoot was at 4 o'clock. We finally wrapped up about 3:15, and I really had not paid attention. But I looked up, and it was amazing. I mean, it was this mass exodus of people. It was like my own little mini Field of Dreams, people trudging through the mud and the snow to come pose for this photo. Both sides of my county road were blocked with people parking along the road. It was kind of overwhelming. I mean, gives me goosebumps just imagining it.
Clearly, when you started this project, you had no idea what it could become, what it would become. How has this experience changed you?
Oh, boy. You know, it's probably the greatest transformation. The inspiration came from my accident. You know, you have a tragic event in your life, and it makes you reflect on what is or isn't important. But then having experienced something like this, you realize how much impact the simple things can have on other people. It's given me a much greater appreciation of the world, the opportunities, and the consideration of others.
Mark, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, Charity. It was wonderful. I appreciate you having me.
Mark Hirsch, he's the photographer of That Tree, and he has just published a book called That Tree, an iPhone photo journal documenting a year in the life of a lonely Burroughs. You can see his Facebook page, of course, That Tree, and he has a website as well, thattree.net. So you have a lot of opportunities to see these beautiful pictures. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins.